everybody. Good morning. Happy Saturday to you. My name is Leo Landaverde, and you are listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. And this is my second installment of the Raising Capital for Your Business series. This is part two. Last Saturday, we talked in length about private equity and loans, and I got some great feedback. And we're going to continue because it's such a hot topic. But enough about that. How are you? How are things going in your business? How is, you know, the summer treating you? Are, you know, is this summer allowing you time to think about your business? You know, I always tell business owners, look, there's two types of engagements when it comes to working on your business. You know, it's either going to be working in your business or it's going to be working on your business. What percentage of your time are you spending every week to work on your business? Meaning whatever you need to, rather than being the practitioner in your business, actually performing or even selling the product or service that you actually make a living on, how you're thinking about growing your business and strategizing about ways to leverage and grow to the next level, you should be spending at least 20% of your time doing that. And if you're not doing that, then you need to call us. So what we do, we help you really, we absolutely love helping businesses grow and go to the next level by providing advisory and intelligence and accounting solutions that make sense. So check us out, www.greenlandhq.com. And here we are. So we got a lot for you today, just like last week. So just a little recap. Last week, we talked about the types of investor funding: equity, loans, and convertible debt. There was not enough time to talk about all three. That's how much it was. Today, we continue on and we're going to talk about how many investors should you talk to if you're actually raising capital? What does that look like? And how do you prioritize? So if we have enough time after that, which I doubt, we're going to talk about eight ways to increase the value of your company. Wouldn't that be exciting? So without further ado, let's get going. So this is the part when we start talking about what that actually looks like. What are the mechanics behind raising capital? And the metrics that you should be looking at if you're going to be talking to investors, how many does it take? How many meetings does it take, et cetera? The most important advice I could give you before you set up in your fund, put your fundraising hat on, is to understand that raising capital is a sales and marketing process that needs to be managed. So let me say that again. Raising capital, it's a sales and marketing process, and it's a full-time job. Somehow, though, many first-time founders think of sales as something that is beneath them. Oh, that couldn't be farther from the truth. This is what I say. An investor's job is to deploy capital and make a return. If you truly believe that you and your company and your products are exceptional and your company will be valuable, then you're actually doing them a favor by helping them invest in your company. If you don't believe in your deep within your core that you have you're amazing, and there is no wonder you don't want to sell to make an investment. So, like any sale, and this is where you need to just, this is a paradigm shift for you. You can't delegate raising capital. You have to be involved. Even if you have somebody helping you by the hand and preparing the collateral materials that you need, the pitch presentation, you know, the pitch deck or the deck presentation, the famous, you know, PowerPoint that goes to the investor, you need to be involved. You can't be a hands-off approach on this. So, like any sale, what do you need first? Prospects. You need prospects. And qualify whether or not they'd be a good fit for your product or service. And what is the product? An investment in your company. You need to figure out, how much time to spend with each prospect, and you need to rigorously manage your time in the calendar. This is where most founders make the mistake. Most founders prepare a deck, right? The deck presentation, the PowerPoint, ask a few friends and investors whom to meet, get a few introductions, and just wing it. As a result, founders often meet the wrong investors, waste time on those who ask for more information. So I'm gonna help you today to kind of wanna walk you through the typical VC process, and I hope you find it helpful. So you start with the initial meeting. So there's the typical VC process. There's the initial meeting and the follow-up. So they say that there are three rules in property, right? In real estate, which are location, location, location. In sales, there are also three rules. Qualify, qualify, qualify. Your entire process should be about testing whether your prospect, your potential financial partner, your investor has any interest, authority to make the decision, the budget, and it's willing to continue spending actual time with you, analyzing you. You know, you can say that like the engagement period. Interest, authority to make a decision, the budget, and is willing to continue talking to you. So if you got those four, you're on the right track. If an investor isn't engaging, then they're not suddenly going to get, you know, if they're not talking to you, all of a sudden you're not going to have a term sheet, which is, you know, short speak for the actual document when they actually dictate how much money they want to give you and what the terms of the, you know, of their money is. We call that the term sheet. The surest sign a fundraising process has stalled or basically gone dark is when you aren't getting follow-up meetings or hearing from VCs or hearing from friends that they got a phone call asking about you. If engagements go south, you either need to move that VC to a lower priority or you need to find ways to improve any of those dimensions. Obviously, points 2 and 3 might mean that you're meeting the wrong person in the firm. You know, the authority to make a decision and they have the budget for it. Moving a VC from an A to a B doesn't mean that they're still your top pick. It just means that your chances are less likely and your extremely limited resources should be allocated elsewhere. Remember, you're trading time to do this. So you better have a sniper's approach to actually looking who you're going to, you know, who you're going to engage. And this is easier said than done. So how many investors should you be speaking with? Great question. Of course, there's no exact number of VCs you should meet. What I'm giving you is basically some guidelines. But for simplicity's sake, let's just say you raise some money already from angels or seed investors, and you're either raising an A round or a B round of venture capital. Now, before we go any farther, I have to explain what that is. Seed. Okay, well, hang tight. We need to go to break, but we'll be back and I'd be happy to explain it. Stay tuned. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo Claudine. Hey everybody, welcome back. So before I was rudely interrupted at the last by my awesome producer, I was about to tell you what, you know, people talk about, yeah, I'm raising a Series A or B or C. What the heck does that mean, right? Well, it starts as seed capital, right? Seed, you're going to hear it as seed, you know, as in a tiny seed of mustard. And probably the easiest way to explain it is if you are building a product, and it's easier to explain in software. If you are building what we call the MVP, the minimal viable product, and you need money to finish that product, you're looking for seed capital. Think about the founders at Google back in the day, long before there were the big money coming in from other VCs or angels or private equity, etc. They were trying to build a product, and I believe that they got about $100,000 to kind of build a prototype, a model of what Google eventually would become, and what they got at the time was seed capital to give it, an idea, to give this product a chance to kind of come to life. So you're going from the whiteboard into an actual prototype. If you have finished your product and you need to go create a repeatable way to acquire customers, then we're talking about an A round, as in letter A for Apple. So once you have a repeatable way to acquire that customer, Series B usually comes to really take that to the next level. Because then you'll know by then what the lifetime value of a potential customer is versus the cost to acquire that customer, what we call the LTV over CAC, the lifetime value of your customer over the cost to acquire that customer. So if you're spending about $1,000 to acquire a customer, but then the lifetime value is $5,000, it behooves you to keep, the return is 5x, five times. So it behooves you to keep pumping money. And then you have, every time you put $1,000, you're going to get $5,000. And then you already went through the seed round and the A round. Then you're prime candidate for B round. And you're talking about, $10, $15, $20 million, depending on the valuation of your company. So with that said, my assumption is that you're actually looking for somewhere between seed and A. And there are those hybrid companies that are being bootstrapping their business for a decade. They're never taking any capital, but the product is not quite finished. But they've been doing well, but they actually want to finish the product. But they've been around for a while and they have a lot of revenue, so they have a repeatable way to acquire new customers. Yeah, but they haven't finished the product, so they are between seed and A. So I like to start with approximately 40 qualified investors. If you don't know what a qualified investor is, but that's it's basically they have the right size in their fund, the geography, they are located in an ideal geographical area. So if you're in California, you're looking for California, and if you're looking for an A round and that you know that the A round would be $3 to $5 million, you don't want to be going to VCs that specialize in B rounds. So the size, the geography. If you're a software, you don't want to be looking for VCs that have a particular amenity to healthcare or logistics or IT. So industry focus is important. The capacity available also, and then they self-start raise a new fund in the last 3 to 4 years. So they have the actual capital ready to be deployed. So if you're raising a round where the new lead investor would invest $5 million, the VC fund must have no less than $100 million if you're looking for them to write a 15. So let me say this again. If you're looking for about $5 million, the size of the fund where those monies come from, it's about $100 million. So the typical size fund will accommodate somewhere between 20, 30 companies. But if you're looking for more than that, more money, we're talking $15, $20 million. Well, the size of the fund has to be in excess of $400 million. So you don't want to go looking for a $5 million investment in a fund that deploys $15 to $20 million at a time. You won't get the time of day. There's no such thing as a general practitioner when it comes to VCs. They all have a specialty. Um, you know, there's hybrids out there, but, you know, I don't want to spend too much time on that. So as far as stacking, you know, if you're thinking, you know, remember I asked you to put your thinking hat on, right? If you're thinking in terms of A, Bs, and Cs, right, you should have about 8 to 10 that you consider A's, that the prospect, they have the right size, geography, industry focus, and they have the capital to deploy, and they are talking to you. You should be talking to at least 8 to 10 of them. You should have 8 to 10 that are also Bs. Why not an A? Because they are interested, but they don't have the right size of the fund, or they can introduce you to somebody, but they're really interested in your idea, or they are B because they are in California, but they don't have the interest in software, etc. It could be a multiple variations of the same thing. So an A, and then it goes, you know, yes, you have the balance 20 to 24 of the 40 should be Cs. So A, B, Cs, right? 10, 10, 20. And A is somebody who would likely to invest in a company like yours. And if chosen, is somebody you'd be interested in working with. Okay, so an A is somebody who would be likely to invest in a company like yours. And if chosen, you would like to be working with them. It's a symbiotic relationship. Think of it as a marriage. You're going to be stuck with each other for a while, 5 to 7 years. You better like each other and be able to, you know, work with each other and be able to have the same vision for where you're trying to go. If you're not likely to get like Sequoia, which is one of the largest VC funds, then just because they're an amazing firm doesn't mean that they should be going in your A-list. Remember what I said, you got to qualify, qualify, qualify. Ideally, you want to start with those VC firms that have an appetite or that have invested in your industry, particularly if they had invested in competitors. You know they understand the market, you know they understand the industry, and they understand the metrics, and they're going to give you a realistic valuation. So, let me put it this way. So if in high school you got a 3.6 GPA, yeah, it's not bad, right? It's a decent GPA. You might want to go to Stanford, but it isn't likely. So you spend more time and energy in schools that you're most likely to get into. The same with the VCs. If you don't have an idea that is going to revolutionize the world and you know it and everybody knows it, and you don't have an amazing track record in your founding team where all of you guys have come from in other companies, and you have a terrific management team with a terrific idea, or even a terrific management team with a mediocre idea, VCs will spend money. They invest in people, not so much an idea. You know, funny thing is, I've heard of people of founders looking for VCs that want to have the VC sign an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, which is a deal killer. VCs really had no interest of taking an idea and do something with it, because that's not their business model. They invest in people. So with that said, a mediocre idea with an amazing and awesome management team will get funded. A great idea with a mediocre team will not get funded. So the A firms, the ones that A, you know, capital A, are the firms that you're going to work the hardest to research, hardest to find, high-quality introductions that make the most effort to engage with. By the way, sidebar, there's plenty of technology and websites that actually cater to people who are looking for capital, who would actually have these CRM models. One of them I've been researching that actually helps you create and the touch points and the sales cycle for reaching out to these VCs. It's really, really cool. It's like Salesforce for these, you know, for people who are looking for capital. So you're going to work the hardest to research, hardest to find high quality introductions, and make the effort to engage with. To be clear, your list is not static. It's going to keep changing. People are going to be coming in and out. If you have a mediocre meeting with a high quality prospect and you don't think they're likely to lean, then drop them to B or C and move on. Likewise, if a firm that you don't think is a top pick suddenly starts engaging and doing work and showing you that they love, you might put them as an A because an offer is important. So you start with some safety zones. Good question. So there's some debate whether you should ever test drive with a few firms before a wider process, or whether you want to get your toes wet with some firms that you think, you know what, if I blow my pitch, they'll be fine because I really don't want to get any money from them. People who believe the former believe that you should see the market event before too many people know that you're in the market. I think there's some truth in this. So I don't think you should. My personal advice is that take the first two meetings as, you know, getting rid of the jitters, sort of your test drive. Does that make sense? So the first two meetings is like, well, don't waste the meetings. It's just you're not probably not going to be at your best. So that gives you good practice. So, you know, if you were to come up with your list, take a couple of people from your C list that you know the chances are remote to fine-tune your pitch. That gives you the practice for your A meetings. And you'll have a sense of the likely questions, comments, or concerns. Then begin your process and as quickly as you can with the up to 8 to 10 firms that you are labeling A, right? So does that make sense? So I know I'm asking you to do a lot of work and this may be heady. So if you're just driving around and you're like, what the heck is he talking about? Well, I'm talking about raising capital for your idea. I granted we are in the middle of, in the Central Valley, we are in California, which is really a hotbed for technology. And here in the Central Valley, your equidistance between San Francisco and LA, chances are that you know somebody who works for a technology firm. That's just the way it is. So I think this is good education for you, and it's an option if you ever want to raise capital for your business. Well, don't reinvent the wheel. Just call us or just email us. Go to www.greenlandhq.com. Anyway, so to begin the process, you start with about 8 to 10 firms. These are the ones that you're likely want as your partner up with you and give you the money, and also have a real possibility of landing them. So far, so good, right? Keeping it 8 to 10 helps you manage the public information flow because there's going to be a lot of information back and forth. So you can hit a broader group in a few weeks and then you can time it such a way, right? So you can hit a broader week and you know you can time it and you can use your CRM to do so. But right now we're going to go to break. When we'll come back and we'll keep getting into your listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. Are we having fun yet? Or am I the only one having fun today? Guys, this I love this topic. I believe so much in it. I'm constantly involved. This is what I do every day, helping companies grow by raising the capital that they need to get to the next level in their business. So if that's you, then you need to listen to this show, right? Long before you go and looking for capital, you need to know, do you have a viable idea? Is your idea bankable? Is your business profitable? Are your financials in order? Do you understand how to approach those people that you're seeking to fund your business, whether it's banks or VCs or convertible debt or family and friends? So that's what we're talking about. You have to be a student of the game. You have to understand your business. You have to know your business. You have to be able to recite knowledge about your business in many areas, sales, marketing, financials, etc. You have to understand it because if you don't understand it, how do you expect somebody else to understand it? And that is partners, customers, vendors, people that are going to finance your business. So one of the most important, so we keep going on this A, B, C, and, you know, raising capital, because this is something that I'm currently engaged in and kind of a fascinating topic, you know, helping companies raise capital by selling a portion of the company, a minority interest in their company, so they can get to the next level. You know, the reasoning is this. Do you rather own 100% of a company that is worth nothing or 40% that is a company that is worth millions? You be the judge of that. Some people have an aversion, a visceral reaction when they think about parting ways with their equity. And I get it. I totally understand it. And I have felt that way before. And I have been on both sides of the coin. I have raised capital and I have raised debt. And I've helped companies raise capital as well. So I get it. But if you have an opportunity before you in the marketplace, you gotta go after it if that's what you want. If you want to have a lifestyle business and you're making tens of thousands of dollars a month and you don't ever have to set foot in the office, but when you probably need to turn off the radio, this show is not for you. But for the rest of us, it's good to have access to capital. So we're talking about having 8 to 10 VC firms in different stages, you know, 8 to 10 firms in the A round, 8 to 10 firms in what we call A, in labeled as A, about 10 firms labeled as B, and about 20 firms labeled as C. But why not 3 or 4 rather than 8 to 10? One of the most important aims a capital raising process is to keep similar firms on the same stage of your process. So if you're talking with too small of a set and one leans in early and offers you a term sheet and you're not sure this is the firm you really wanted to work with, it's incredibly difficult to slow them down to say, we really need to finish our process and we'll get back to you, as you run the risk that they feel played. Think about it, right? It's like dating. If you show too much interest in somebody you're going after romantically, and then you decide, I'm just kind of testing the field, I'm not quite ready to commit, wouldn't the other person find it offensive? Same thing, right? Feelings get hurt. Then you only get one chance. So you don't want to burn your bridges. So an investor has feelings, believe it or not. An investor who doesn't feel like there is a two-way commitment will eventually walk and look for deals to perceive as a better two-way fit. It bears repeating. You got to be ready to commit if a deal makes sense. And if it doesn't make sense, say so. A VC, of course, they want you only to come and see them because that means they have no competition. They understand that there's going to be competition, but they don't want to be played for the sake of being played. So I think the easiest way to put it is you have to look for people who think like you, talk like you, walk like you, like basically your avatar. The difference between you and them, they have the money and you don't. So there is a lot to say about people that have, there's a lot of trust that goes into parting ways with capital. You taking capital and them giving away their capital is risk. As I said before, only a small percentage of firms, of businesses, actually become profitable. They give the kind of returns that the VCs are looking for. Only 1% to 2% will give the 5x return, that become the powerhouses, the unicorns. The rest will give returns, some, even 2 to 3 times, but not quite the home runs. It's best when it's a warm introduction. If you know somebody who knows somebody, that's why, you know, these networking events are powerful. If you're looking to raise money, you need to go to these events when there are all the VCs are there and you got to shake hands. You got to commit the time to go to where they are. You don't want to expect them to come to you. How do you know if a VC is engaged? Well, the first meeting is usually with 1 or 2 people within the firm, usually the associates, right? The first line of defense, those bright young men and women who graduated top of their class and the Ivy League schools who are savvy, they know their data, and they are scouring the world looking for those prize companies that can become the unicorns. So you start meeting with, you know, you'll have a meeting with one or two of them and the VC firm that you're in, you know, that you're pursuing. And so you might start with a partner, who actually may be a principal and an associate, or just two associates, who knows, right? In any event, there is a screening meeting or an introductory meeting to the firm. It is hard, but not that hard, to get that first meeting for a talented founding team who hustle. If you're hustling, chances are you're going to get plenty of those introductory meetings. It is infinitely harder to get a prompt second meeting due to the rigorous time management on behalf of a VC. VCs, for the record, will only grant you a second meeting in 9 to 10 months to hear a progress update. So once they give you the money, they're just not going to see you all the time. They may request that you give them quarterly financials or have the occasional talk, but don't expect a lot of hand-holding. Many VCs will appear to be super friendly at first in the first meeting because they are there to learn and get to know you and to see if there's an upside. Yes, some of them can be jerks, right? But that's just the way it is, right? The warmest, friendliest, and yet most direct VC is the one that is going to be straight up front with you and is not going to waste your time. Now, there are some like that. Most of them will give you the introductory meeting, but they just won't follow up. They just ghost you, right? VCs are often friendly in the first meeting because they just realize, hey, you know, this is part course of what we do. So, you know, we realize that, hey, you have to meet, you know, it's basically meet and greet people and kiss the babies. That's VCs. It's part of it's almost like a public service that they do. They want to meet with founders, even may have very little interest, but that's what they do. It's also a political thing. How do you know if somebody is super engaged? The simple, easiest way to know if a VC is engaged, if you get a second meeting. If that happens, if you get a follow-up phone call or an email, you know they're actually engaged. No VC spends more time evaluating your company unless they know that they at least have some interest. There's a simple process in your job is to look for buying signals. Remember, qualify, qualify, qualify. Other signs of engagement? They ask you to meet with portfolio companies. They want feedback on your product or you, right? They want them to check you out. They ask you to meet a colleague, set up a call to go through the product demo, financial walkthrough, whatever, you know, to speak with customers, etc. It's not necessarily an engagement if they ask you to send a bunch of financial information under the guise of doing analysis on your firm. You know what I mean? So you have to know those buying signals. You have to know when they are not with you and when you should stop spending your time with them. Remember, you only have so many hours in a day. And you can only do so much. Okay? Follow me? So, is this helping you? You know, as in everything, one thing I've known, and one of the main reasons I love entrepreneurs is because I am one. We are the most relentless bunch of people. We don't take no for an answer, and we'll keep trying until we figure it out. Your mindset in all of this It's 90% courage and 10% knowledge. Get the people to help you get through the doors. So hopefully that helps, you know, and this is an exciting time. I know we need to cut to break. So stay tuned and I'll bring it home. So you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Lee and Claudine. We'll be right back. Been talking about this for 45 minutes straight, and I have so much more to talk to you about. We're raising capital. The topic of today is, how many investors should you talk to when looking for capital? I'm not talking about banks today. I'm not talking about getting money from friends and family or any other source except venture capitalists. So this is exhausting. There was a lot of information. So I'm trying to bring it home for you. So so what have we been talking about so far? We've been talking about lining up about 40 people, 40 firms that you think are going to be able to get you to where you need. So 8 to 10 labeled as A's, about 10, 8 to 10 as B's, and 10 to 20 as C's. And that seems to be the formula that works. So, okay, some easy hacks to get in front of a VC again if your process stalls. Okay, number one, have them meet key team members they haven't yet met, particularly if these are people whom the VC would want to know, regardless of whether or not they fund your company. Key members of your team, right? Number two, show a demo of your product that is yet to be released. This requires you to be disciplined and not sure that ensure that it's not too early in the process, but a quick message to a VC that says, hey, I'd love to show you something really cool, new features we built and that we haven't shown to the market yet. Can I get 20 minutes to swing by? It's a good way to engage. Number three, sometimes I encourage teams to create new analysis on future revenue projections, competitor reviews, pricing studies, endorsements, any information that creates a compelling next meeting, it's worth doing. With some pre-planning, you might even know what information you show in your first or second meeting, what fragments you have for a follow-up meeting. Number four, any other idea... another idea is to ask whether it's okay to meet another member of that VC firm in a one-on-one session to show them the product. So you get another person who is going to be an advocate, hopefully an advocate that can keep pushing your deal, you know, forward. You can't just ask for a generic person. You have to be a named individual, somebody else by name that you know, in an effort to expand your Rolodex. Another fan, another advocate on the firm. Due diligence meetings are the hardest to secure because VCs, of course, know that these follow-up meetings create obligations for them. And if they are balancing five potential deals and they haven't decided which, whether or not you're a fit, then they don't meet again easily. As a result, many entrepreneurs take the easy route of taking new first meetings because they're easier to get, easier to prepare for. You already have a deck presentation, and they feel like progress. Frankly, this is like running a sales campaign, and when your last big push to persuade them for the spirit departments go back, and it starts feeling difficult. So when the process of selling becomes difficult, then you start working on selling to other customers. Is you gotta work your leads to yes or no. And I know it gets inconvenient and I know it gets hard, but that's what I said at the outset. Raising capital for your business, it's a full-time job and it's a sales job. You gotta put your sales hat on, okay? The bottom of the funnel is hard, pretty hard. So I hope that helps. Here's another thing, why you need to keep feeding the top of the funnel, right? Remember we talked about this funnel and raising capital as a sales process. So in some cases, VCs lean into a deal, do tons of work, and seemingly get so interested that they seem about to submit a term sheet only to have them say no at the last minute. That happens. Your lead on the deal was likely sincere in his interest in you, but possibly got shot down when you're seeking approval. The problem with putting all your eggs into one basket is that if you get a no, then you don't have a well-established pipeline. And if you don't have a well-established pipeline of other deals, you end up having to go back to square one and you lose 6 to 8 weeks, which can be existential, which could kill some startups. So let's kind of wrap it up. Fundraising is a sales and marketing job in a process which the buyer is a VC and the product is equity in your company. Any great sales and marketing campaign begins with a methodical planning, and any great process is run with rigorous time allocation and the most important prospects. Qualify, qualify, qualify. It's what I've been saying. Because many startup founders view running the business as their only job and view fundraising as something they are forced to do every 18 months, it often doesn't get the time, attention, and resources it deserves. It's true that fundraising in its own right will make you successful, but being successful at raising capital can give you the distinct advantage in the market against your competitors who aren't as good at getting finance as you or have to spend more time in the market. You got to plan accordingly. Capital raising is a year-round activity and never ends. Place a small amount of your monthly time allocation for this task. Outside of capital raising periods, it should still be at least 15% of your time as a CEO. If you are the CEO of your own company, your number one job is to continue to expand your company, increase the pipeline, and keep making sure that your company is well-funded. And a lot of people don't think about that. They think, well, my job is to continue to perfect the product and making sure that the marketing and the branding, and it's great. And they take their eye off the financials and CEOs that are not sure how much money is owed to them or how long before they run out of cash. That's not just the CFO's job. That is also the CEO's job. Yes, the CFO for the companies that can afford a CFO can assist them with that. But the CEO is not, and they should not be ignorant of that and when a company is going to run out of cash. So if you are a company that is growing, that is generating cash, that wants to figure out a way how to take advantage of the opportunity in the marketplace, you probably need to come to Greenland and need to, you know, look us up. Go to greenlandhq.com and I'd be happy to just talk to you. And any one of my team will be happy to talk to you about, you know, whether you are a likely candidate for venture capital, if that's what you want. But we love doing it. And this is, you know, this is what you need to do. You need to just keep looking for ways to improve your product or service, continue to, regardless of whether you ever get funding for your business. You should have a business that makes money. I always say that if you don't not building a business for profit, you're going to have a very expensive hobby. And who wants that? You either are running a profitable business or you're running an expensive hobby. You choose. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in today. I hope you had a blast. I had a blast. We're missing you, Claudine, but she'll be back next week. You've been listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. Have a great weekend, everybody.